Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wrestling is my escape. I'm glad I get to hit people, so I don't want to do any bad things anymore.
OVW is the little engine that could. You get outside of WWE and AEW, the best wrestling in America is taking place right here.
You want to go one-on-one with me?
Yeah, baby!
People watch OVW because you get the first glimpse at potentially the next big thing in pro wrestling.
It all comes down to one thing. One of the most legendary professional wrestlers ever, Al Snow.
Professional wrestling is an art form. It's the art of physical storytelling.
I am gonna rip your freaking head off!
It's a morality play. It's good versus evil.
The art and the creativity of this industry, there's nothing like it.
You don't feel like a nobody anymore. I'm Hollywood Haley J.
Wrestling is a very aesthetic business. And you have to look your best.
This is the Muppets. I'm Kermit the Frog, and I literally run the Muppet Show.
Al is one of the best wrestling minds, but you know what? Al's not the best with money. This is the summer to take it to the next level. We need to create a summer tour.
A lot of times, I get told something to do from people that have no clue how it works.
If we don't start doing better, there won't be an OVW.
I've spent 40 years making a name for myself in this business. I'll be damned if I'm going to let anybody ruin it.
This month saw the release of the Netflix documentary Wrestlers. It details the ups and downs during a pivotal summer for Ohio Valley Wrestling. It's been described as the home of the future of wrestling. Tomorrow's superstars today, a piece of Louisville history that needs to be preserved at all costs. And it's also been described as the Muppet Show. So who better to talk about it than with Kermit the Frog? AKA OVW yes. CEO and co-owner Al Snow. Al, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Yeah, typically, I'm running around going, hey, stop, putting fires out, just like Kermit does on The Muppet Show. But
what was nice is that you did essentially do that all but the hand gestures during wrestling.
Yeah.
So we did get a very Kermit vibe from you throughout it.
Yeah, and it happens every day, every week. Something's always going on and something has to be taken care of and something's broke or something blew up or something caught on fire. And, you know, I've got to try and figure a way to keep it going. So, you know,
people now
duct tape and tape. That's it. You just keep moving.
And people are seeing like how much you do at that company every single week. What's been the reaction so far to Wrestlers on Netflix?
Absolutely universally positive. You know, everybody has been raving about it. Which really surprised me, you know, because you expect that whenever you do something, you're going to have some detractors. That just seems to be the nature of things. But quite honestly, it's all been very, very good, all very positive. You know, we got 4-star reviews from Forbes, Esquire, Variety, Vanity Fair, New York Times, Wall Street Journal. Unheard of. We got 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which apparently completely unheard of to get that kind of a rating. And you know, and I'm really happy with it. I mean, I'm really, really thrilled that, you know, that it's gotten such wide acceptance. And I think that's a credit to Greg Whiteley and his amazing crew of people. I mean, I really think they deserve the, you know, they deserve the applause.
We're going to, a heads up, by the way, if you've not seen every episode, I've binge watched them. I know what's happening. So spoilers ahead is your forewarning if you haven't watched some of these bits yet. But certainly in the first episode, there's a big focus on OVW's amazing legacy. You know, those names like John Cena, Batista, Randy Orton, Shelton Benjamin all come through there. It wasn't really discussed as much here, but I know so I've talked about it with OVW guys that we've had on Cultaholic in the past. But from your perspective, does OVW's like grandiose legacy, does it put pressure on you and on the talent to make it work?
I don't think it puts pressure in that sense. I have the pressure and the stress of carrying on Danny Davis's legacy. You know, he agreed, you know, he sold the company to me, honestly, because he thought that I would be the one single person that would care enough to try to do everything I could to keep it and keep it going. And, and that's a lot of pressure. You know, you don't want to ever be the champion and of a particular group or organization and it go under, because that means basically, you know, it was on your watch that, you know, the company went on belly up. Well, it's even worse if you're the owner of a company that's been in existence and has a storied history, and now you get it and, you know, several years later it goes under. So, you know, I don't want to see that happen. I want to do everything I can to try to keep this and Danny's legacy alive.
You do so with co-owners Matt Jones and Greg Greenberg, who we hear a lot from, and there's some major focal points in the show with your relationship, particularly with Matt, who comes over as somebody who at first fails to connect with the talent and yourself. But you mentioned that, you know, some days you've just got to eat shit sandwiches and put a smile on your face. So why is it important to, as you say, eat those shit sandwiches?
You know, you've got to do what's necessary to go along, to get along, you know, and when you're not in a position to where you can really, you know, force the change in direction, then you've just got to accept the circumstances and, you know, basically, again, the mantra of OVW, take shit and make shoe polish. You know, it's not always, I understand and expect that when you have a partnership, you're going to have, you know, disagreements and things like that. And that the nature of that part of the relationship, I have no issue with. It was, you know, I think Matt came from a world in radio where he was the talent. And, you know, as such, he's the thing that drives the bus, you know, and he could kind of get away with behaving with impunity. But, you know, because, you know, there are a lot of wrestlers, both in WWE, everywhere, that when, you know, they kind of change personality-wise, attitude-wise, behavior-wise, when they kind of become the thing that drives the bus, when they know that they're the thing that's, you know, selling the tickets, you know, sometimes they get a little out of hand. That's why we have a lot of etiquette and rules of behavior in the wrestling business is to always prevent people from believing that they're now bigger than the show, you know, and I think Matt came in with that idea, that belief that had been fostered, you know, in his other career, which he's entitled, I'm sure, to behave in such a manner. But he came and brought that here, not understanding that he was no longer the talent. He was no longer the focus. He was no longer the product, and that the wrestlers were. And as such, you need to act accordingly. And that caused a rift that I got to give him credit. He's working on trying to repair, you know, and it created a lot of a toxic adversarial environment between he, myself and the locker room with him. And you know, we're you know, he's starting to learn and understand the situation and starting to, you know, we're trying to rehabilitate that whole thing.
I was going to bring this up a bit later on, but it seems sort of pertinent to mention it now. So during the show, we capture Matt have a seizure, which was a very tense moment that was captured all on every moment of it. And it's how you guys sort of crowd around and make sure he's safe. And obviously, which you would have done anyway, because you're just good people. Mm. Was this the first time something like this had happened? And was it, as it appeared on the show, a turning point in sort of Matt's relationship with OVW?
I think... Now that I don't know, as far as it being a turning point, I couldn't attest to that. I don't know if that was what motivated him, in experiencing that. He had had and has had a couple seizures there at the arena. I don't know what it is about the arena that brings them out at him, but they have happened. That was not the first. I think that was the second. And then around Christmas time last year, he had a third, where he had we didn't even know it had happened until we saw he was laying on the floor by the front door, and as we were getting ready to have a show, and he has stated that it's a condition that he has had to deal with his whole life, and assures everyone that, once they pass, that he's fine, but that, he has to deal with those. So, which is, I hope that they, they don't happen again or, at all, if not for a very long time.
Your office is a, you might as well put a revolving door in, because I feel like there's always people coming in and going out.
Yeah.
We've seen some real crunch meetings with you and Matt and Greg take place in there. We've seen shows written in there as well on pen and paper. I've got to ask, Certified came in, just cut a promo and left. Does that happen a lot, Al?
Yeah. That kind of stuff happens all the time. Yeah, they'll be, just walk in there and, I'll be in the production office, doing something, or, I'll be out walking around and I'll come back and they're in there getting changed. They're getting dressed in my office. I'll be like, get out of my office. There's no room. I don't care. Get out of my office. Don't put your balls on my chair. Get out of my office.
It's a shame we have to say that out loud, but we do.
Yeah.
Put the balls
a lot on. Of time I walk in there and they'll all be gathered in their head like they're having their own meeting. I'm like, get out of my office. What are you doing in here?
Well, so maybe not a revolving door. Maybe a lock on the door might be the way to
go. Yeah, I need a lock on there for sure.
Do you think that part of the fact that you have people that will willingly get changed in your office and can come in and go out as they please, is that part of the family mentality that you've cultivated at OVW? Is that a big part of it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're a very dysfunctional family, but, we are very much I try to create a very family atmosphere there. Still a business, I make no mistakes about that. I always, impress that upon everyone all the time that, we're in the business of, motivating an audience to want to see us. And that's at the end of the day, once you walk through that curtain, the onus is on you. The responsibility is yours to make yourself a star and to be an attraction and to get people to want to pay to see you. And that everything. But, I do care about these people in spite of themselves. And, I try to treat them as such, And my wife's such a wonderful person, and she kind of mothers them all, and they call her Mama Jess. And, so that kind of lends itself, I think, to also that kind of family environment, and I want, I try or am trying to extend that atmosphere to the fans as well, because we're, if it weren't for the fans, regardless of this, Netflix series ever came out, I mean, it's 100% we're where we're at and are still surviving because of the support of the fans.
I have to ask you, actually, in terms of that, I should have asked you earlier on, but how did the Netflix series actually come to pass in the first place? Where did that conversation begin?
That was a one in a million chance. I mean, quite honestly, Greg and his wife went to a wedding where a former schoolmate was attending the wedding, and she happened to be an executive with BBC America. And they started having a conversation, and, you know, Craig had pointed out that he had just bought into the wrestling company. Well, one thing led to another, and, you know, the conversation continued and deepened. And then, you know, the idea of came up about a documentary, and then, you know, they spoke to Greg Whiteley, and, you know, I think, you know, BBC America came and filmed like a 5-6 minute teaser tape that they then, you know, showed to Greg, and you know, that hooked him. He wanted to do it. The next step was, of course, to try to now get Netflix to, you know, be behind it and produce it. And they were finally on board, and you know, it was, well, they're going to come out, you know, at this time in film. Well, now they're going to move it to this. Well, now, and then they were here at the end of May last year, and they filmed 7 days a week, about 12 to 16 hours a day, every single day until the end of August. And, you know, we all agreed, and this is, you know, a testament to the wrestlers and to the staff, that we all decided, you know, that we were all going to be in 100%. We're going to open up. We weren't going to hold back. You know, we weren't going to be like, well, you can cover this, but you can't cover that, you know, because before they got here, I explained to everybody, you know, we're all in this or we're not, because you can't be half pregnant. You know, you gotta either be or not be. And everybody was, and that, I think, is what, you know, and the talent of Greg Whiteley that's put it together. But I think that's what's made, you know, the series so popular and positive and relatable. And that's the thing, you know, even if you don't like wrestling, I cannot encourage people enough to watch the show, not just because we're a part of it. There's something in it for you that you can relate to. I mean, if you own a small business, you're going to relate. If you're a person who has a dream and is, you know, struggling and, you know, to pursue your passion, you're going to relate. if you are a wrestling fan, you know, I think it's going to increase your respect and your appreciation for it. And I think if you're not a wrestling fan, I honestly hope and believe that it will give you a newfound respect and create an interest where you might want to start to, you know, follow it and watch it from now on. So that's what we're hoping for.
You agree to, as you say, go all in and be 100% open as the documentary team were there. What were some of the sort of preconceptions from the crew from BBC of America when they came in to capture everything, and what was their beliefs and ideas about wrestling when they finished?
Well, I don't know what their beliefs were. They didn't really, you know, state any when they first came in. I do know that a majority of them, most of them, weren't fans. You know, a lot of them hadn't even ever watched wrestling. I know that by the end of it, I mean, they were all hooked. They were all as big of fans as the fans who showed up at the show were. And I know that we still stay in contact with them, and, you know, they are all still following the show on a weekly basis. And, you know, they all talk about how they wish. I know several of them are on other projects, you know, which is the nature of what they do. They get done with this and they go right to the next. And, you know, like, oh, we really wish we were back in OVW. We'd love to be back in OVW. We miss you guys. So, and, you know, that was fun to watch people that were, that had never even had an interest in wrestling, become fans of wrestling, you know, because of what they were watching and experiencing. And that again was my hope, you know, because I say that I opened up 100%, which I did, but I was also very at the thought of it, I was very reticent about doing so, you know, for me, I know, you know, we in the United States, you know, people have known on a mass scale since the 1940s that wrestling is predetermined, you know, and, you know, and in the UK, I mean, I remember watching a Monty Python skit back in the 70s, like, you know, early 70s. And they were, you know, they did a skit where they had two wrestlers and, you know, they'd be like growling and, you know, looking all aggressive, and they'd lock up, and then they'd start, hello, how are you today? I'm doing fine, you know. And then, and that's my terrible English accent.
It's pretty good, to be fair.
Yeah. And then, you know, they'd grab a headlock and, are you coming over for dinner on Sunday? And, you know, they'd start chatting while they were in holds, and then they go back to wrestling. So even in the UK, you know, in the 70s, you know, the vast audience knew, that's always been there, but there's always been an agreement between the audience and us everywhere that, you know, hey, we know, you know, and you know that we know, you know, but we all agree that we're not going to rub it in your face. And, you know, or in the best analogy I can give you is it's because this was why I was concerned, is it's like the Wizard of Oz. You know, everything's magical, everything's colorful, everything's exciting. It's a big adventure until the very end of the movie, you pull the curtain back and it's just a little old man, you know, pulling knobs and twisting, you know, pushing buttons and doing things like that. And you're like, well, the magic's gone now. And so I was concerned about that. You know, I didn't want to take the magic away from wrestling. And I think, you know, I had to trust Greg, and I think I didn't, you know, that trust was warranted. I think he did a great job of doing exactly what he wanted, which was he pulled back the curtain, but he didn't pull it so far back that it kills the magic. I think it actually helps to enhance it.
Because you see some of the characters from OVW go through their own trials and tribulations. Hollywood Haley J and Amazing Maria, the mother daughter story that played out in front of your very eyes. What a dream bit of time, and that was for them to be there to capture that. Was it as cathartic for them both as it appeared on the screen?
I think so. Yeah, I really do. I know, and I sensed and knew that they had a lot of wounds, you know, and. You know, Jerry Jarrett always used to say, you know, you got to tell them enough of the truth to make them believe a lie. And I knew with the angst that the two of them had, that it was going to come through, and it was going to not only feel real, it was going to be real. You know, that helped. And I knew, you know what I mean? Them doing this would allow them to kind of get all of some of that out and do away with it. And I think at the end, and even today, I've seen that they have a much better relationship. I can kind of sense it and feel it. We haven't really talked about it, but I've really kind of gotten that opinion that they since that match, they really seem to have grown closer together, which thrills me to no end. You know what I mean?
Oh God, yeah. If wrestling can do that and bring a mother and daughter together in such an unusual circumstance, then more power to it.
Yeah.
There's other characters that come through in the show, and I want to touch on a few of them before I let you go. Mahabali Shearer comes across as a very wholesome, very humble guy from a very respectable family and wants to do well. But the disappointment in his face when he was told he was losing the national title, you could it jumped out through the screen at you. You could sense it. And it's something that you've talked about before. And I know sometimes you've said, like, you know, you have to make these decisions for business. You have to always make decisions for business, but yes. How often does your emotional intelligence almost stop you making a business intelligence decision?
A lot, you know, there are a lot of times, you know, I know what it means to them you know, personally and professionally, and you know, I understand, I relate, but then I, you know, but I've got to, I gotta go with my intuition, my experience, of what I know at the end of the day is best for business, which is best for everyone overall, you know. And I would love nothing more than to, you know, to just, you know, do, it would make my life a lot easier just to do the things that I think would please each one of the wrestlers. But at the same time, if I'm, you know, only concerned with pleasing all of the wrestlers, well, we nobody ever really becomes a star, and we never really get a chance to, you know, make any of that, anything stand out, or anyone. And, you know, we never create that, the thing that drives the bus, which is heat, you know, that want, that need, and that desire. And it was, you know, what messed it up was, you know, the intent was, because there's always more money in the chase, you know, and you know, taking it off of Shira, having him chase James Storm, you know, and him finally getting it back, and hopefully by getting it back, elevating him further, was what I was looking to do. And then he got, his shoulder got hurt, you know, and that derailed the whole thing. And it's funny, because a lot of people don't understand, like, you know, everything that you do, every idea you have, every, you know, direction, you know, like that, for instance, with Shira and James Storm, well, it was the right thing at that particular time. And the second Shira got hurt, well, then that derailed it. And it was no longer the right thing, because now it was a different time. By the time he was healed back up, you know, things had progressed and had moved forward, you know, and now you got to take him in a completely different direction than what you were originally thinking of doing, you know. And, you know, it was through no fault of his own. It just simply now no longer is going to be able to work, because now that window of time is no longer there, you know. It's very hard to explain how that, you know, those things operate, but that's on a weekly basis with every single wrestler. You know, you'll have a particular idea and you'll be like, yes, this, you know, then something happens, the guy can't make it, the car broke down, or, you know, he's hurt, you know, and then that window starts to close and now it doesn't work anymore. You know, that was why I was so concerned when Maria and Haley went to California with WOW, was because I had already, they didn't show that part that I had already begun. I was already beginning to start telling that and building towards where we ultimately ended up going with the two of them, you know. But the second they take themselves out of the picture for any period of time, there's no guarantee that now I can pick it right back up and make it work the same as I could have if they'd have been there the whole time, you know. And it's a real concern, because now that window can move on down the road and you're done, you know. Kind of the best example I'd give you is, imagine you're trying to hit a target while a car drives past, and you got to shoot through both windows without hitting the glass and then hit the target in the center, and you mistime it, well, the bullet's going to hit the car and it'll never hit the target. So.
When it comes to, obviously, because OVW runs shows live every Thursday, so you rely on the OVW talent to be there for a Thursday, because you say you want to tell those stories, you want to hit those targets. Do you think sometimes that can potentially hinder some wrestlers from looking at other avenues and exploring other opportunities, because they are so nervous about losing their momentum at OVW?
I don't think so. I mean, I try to work with them as best I can. You know, I have to juggle all the time, you know, between Jesse Godders, who has a schedule, EC3 has a schedule, you know, they all, you know, come to me at different times. Haley's came to me at different times, and, you know, I'll be building towards a match at a pay-per-view or something, and she'll, oh, I can't be here on that day. And I'm like, you know, then it's up to me to then have to try to adjust and then, you know, make sure that we still are able to go through those two windows and hit that emotional target, you know, in time and pace it out, you know, and it's a challenge, but that, you know, here's the upside. The upside is, one, I'm going to give you an experience you can't get anywhere else short of being in WWE. Okay. Period. Two, I'm going to give you exposure that short of being in AEW or WWE, you're not going to get. Three, you know, I'm going to make you literally, I'm going to make you into an attraction. I'm going to make you into a star in this business where you will get other opportunities because other people are going to be watching this program and are going to see you in that manner and are going to think I can capitalize and utilize that person as well. Because you otherwise you wouldn't be getting those opportunities if it were not for what I was doing with you. So that, you know, and in you know, in the trade-off is the downside for you is that I need you here consistently so I can achieve that goal of educating an audience that you are an attraction, that you are somebody to be utilized, you know, and because without it, you're not going to get those opportunities. And it's kind of a, you know, AC-doocy, you know, it's a six of one and half a dozen another, you know, you got it. There's a give and take. And, you know, the upside is that all of that's going to happen. The downside is now you got to juggle your schedule with mine so that I can utilize you in a proper manner. You know, I can still utilize you. I just can't make you the person or thing that I'm building around because you're not going to be available and be here on enough of a basis to where I can then capitalize and exploit it. So therefore, I'll just simply, if you still want to be a part of things, that's fine. I'll simply utilize you to now make someone else.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Do get people coming and going throughout OVW. James Storm, who we talked about, came in for that match with Shearer.
And let me make something clear, okay? Oh, sure. Because my idiot partner, you know, said something about James Storm was not worth, you know,
I was gonna come to that.
$600, yeah. And that's literally Matt's arrogance and his ignorance, okay? You know, he doesn't know, he doesn't understand. And please understand this, okay? James did that as we all do within the wrestling business. We call it the brother-brother deal, you know? From one brother to another brother. I've had Billy Gunn, Tommy Dreamer, Abyss, you know, Scotty Tuhati, you know, James Storm, you know, Jesse Godders, EC3. They all come in and they all do favors and do things for a lot less, you know, because of what I can afford, you know, and they work with me. They're worth, believe me, a lot. Just, you know, James is worth a lot more than what I could ever afford to give him on my budget, you know, and, you know, and he knows that and he understands that. And he lives, you know, he lives in Nashville, which is a 2-hour car ride from where, you know, from Louisville. And so he was doing that as a favor for me, and he was doing it as a way to give back to the younger talent in the business of coming in, working with, because you know, he and Shira have had a very tight relationship, and it was a way for him to give back to Shira. It was a way to give back to wrestling. It was a way to do a favor for me. And because he absolutely is worth far more than what I could afford to do, you know, and that's partly what, you know, one, because I just don't have the resources, and two, I also want to use him multiple times. So I don't have the budget to give him his normal rate, which he's well worth doing, because he did sell a lot of tickets that night. There was a very strong interest in seeing he and Shira against each other. And I purposely brought him in and asked him to do so because I, you know, James being there would help elevate the company, and it also it helped elevate Shira. And I didn't have an opponent that was, you know, for an audience would be on a level that would, you know, be able to put Shira in some kind of jeopardy so that they would be like, oh God, we got to come and see this because Shira might not be able to win. You know, and that's why I needed, you know, and why I've reached out occasionally to other people and my friends, and, you know, they've done a favor for me, and they've done a favor for the business by coming in at a much, much greater, lesser rate than what they would normally and normally get, and deservedly they need to get it.
So things are good with you and James, though.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's no problem. I, you know, I didn't say it, so
yeah, exactly. You know. But that's as long as it's good with you guys. Brian Kennison's story is a bit of a bittersweet one. I've known Brian for about a year, and it was interesting to see him in his day to day activity there. A young guy who came in, you know, and was handed a camera and set about being creative and throwing himself into it. And at one point in the documentary, and this is more of a Matt thing again, it kind of felt like the success or the failure of the company fell on his shoulders a little bit. And there was a meeting where it was like, you've got to, you know, and you keep bringing these people in, and we see sort of how that impacts his personal life. How do you feel Brian was treated by the co-owners during that documentary, and did the documentary portray it in a fair and balanced light?
I did. The documentary did. I mean, it was, you know, I thought that, you know, I understand from a business standpoint, hey, you know, we need to generate more business to, you know, justify what we're paying you. You know, this is an expense, and we need a balance, you know, to be able to keep saying, yeah, well, you know, there's a value in having that person here. I get that. I mean, that's every business has that. It's how you approach it. You know, if you're going to have that conversation, you go, look, we're in a situation, Brian, where, you know, what we're bringing in ain't matching what we're putting out. And we really need to cut some expenses and some costs. And, you know, unfortunately, one of the places we're looking to cut is you. You know, we don't want to. And, you know, is there anything you can do or tell us how to do to where you can generate more, to where you can be it's justifiable to where we can keep you? You know, there's a positive way to where you can, you know, explain the situation instead of just going, well, I got to tell you something. You know, you've got the sword of Damocles hanging over your head now, and either put up or shut up. You know, that, and again, that's, you know, I think Matt sometimes has to learn how to, you know, to manage people. You know, that's I think that's a new experience for him.
Now, final character to talk about in the show is you, and how this becomes, by the end of the documentary, the story of the in-ring comeback of Al Snow, a series of twists and turns leads you getting back into the ring for the OVW's The Big One. Now, had the conversation come up pre-documentary about you doing a match for OVW?
No, it didn't. You know, and I know it might come across like it was contrived and it was planned, but it wasn't. You know, they prior to that conversation that you see, Matt had pitched that idea like, you know, a month before or whatever. And he and Craig had been pestering me, you know, that's why I was sitting there with the behavior that I was, because I was only reluctant to do it, for one reason. It was, and it was, certainly wasn't, you know, for drama or anything like that. I was reluctant to do it, and I still am to this day reluctant to put myself on the show, because I'm not, and I said this, and they didn't put it in, you know, but I'm not selling me anymore. I'm now selling the talent. Okay. And historically it has been proven, whenever you have somebody that's got power behind the camera, in front of the camera, that ultimately the show ends up getting made about them, because it's just human nature. And therefore, the show itself, to some degree or another, suffers. It's never as good as it could be, because the person who is backstage naturally is going to be more concerned with themselves than anything else, and rightfully so, you know. And that's what I kept trying to, and still do, try to explain, is that, look, if I've got so much going on backstage, and, you know, like you said earlier, the office door is a revolving door. And everyone's coming to me for every single segment or match that's on that show, every single promo, every single finish. I'm the one going over all of that. I have help. I have Doug Basham. I have Maria James, and I have Jim Morris. You know, they're awesome. The talent still come to me, and I still have to have an answer for them. And that takes a lot of focus. It takes a lot of, you know, okay, I gotta keep track of this, keep track of that. And then when the show's on, like, I'm running, you know, I'm not just sitting there with a headset on. I've got the agent talking to me, asking me questions. I've got talent coming in and asking me questions. I've got to talk to, you know, the guy who's timing the show. What, how much time do we have left? What do we do next? Take that minute. That segment went a minute long. Well, take this minute off of this segment. They won't need it. You know, I got to juggle all of that for the whole show. So whenever I'm now on the show, I've got to stop all of that, get up, put a jacket on or whatever, and then run out there and do that. Well, now you're wanting me to be in a match, you know, and which is fine. I have no problem with doing that. But the fact of the matter is that now I'm selling me. Well, I'm not going to go out there and drop the ball. I'm not going to be an embarrassment. And I'm not, you know, I'm going to now, I need to focus on me. And rightfully so. And I need to focus on my match, and I need to make sure that it is what it needs to be. Well, then that means I've got to take some of that focus away from everybody else. And now they're not going to get the benefit of having me help them as much on that particular show as they would have if I wasn't wrestling. And so that was why I was very reluctant to do it. I didn't want to, you know, they don't properly show just how long that conversation was going on, of them sitting there badgering me about wanting, you know, getting me to do it. And finally I acquiesced and, you know, and said, yeah, I'll do it, you know. And I was like, ugh, now I'm stuck myself in a position to where I'm responsible for not just the show, but the main event of the show, sending people out the door. And I've got to make sure that I can get that done, plus everything else. And it was a little, as expected, a little stressful. But, you know, I when I'm in the ring, I love being in there and doing what I'm doing. And, you know, and I was in there with some great guys who were able to follow along and, you know, keep up with doing what I do. Because contrary to popular belief, you know, these days a lot of talent do kind of mentally rehearse or script what they're going to do before they go to the ring. The vast majority do. I just go out there and make it up as I go along. And, you know, if you can't keep up, well, then that's when things can kind of go awry, you know. And those guys did an awesome job of just following what I was doing while I was doing it.
After the match, you were all in the bar and there were drinks and there was celebration, and don't take it the wrong way, Al, it was the most I'd seen you smile in 7 hours. It was the most I'd seen you smile. Was it a smile?
I do smile.
I know you smile. It's a lovely smile. We save it for special occasions, though.
Yes.
Now, when it comes to that smile, was it
yes.
a smile because you were excited that the the match had gone well and maybe your gears are turning again? Or was it a smile, relief that it was over?
It was a smile of satisfaction. You know, it was, honestly, I was happy because I felt like we, you know, everybody got an experience that I think that they otherwise wouldn't have gotten. That was part of the reason I did the match was I wanted the wrestlers, you know, the talent to see just exactly what they can do, you know, and see the real magic when they do it. And, you know, and that was, I felt like I was able to do that, you know, and so it wasn't just for the audience, it was for the wrestlers themselves, you know, and it also, I was happy because, you know, and smiling because I felt like I'd accomplished what the real goal was, which was to put enough asses in that building so that I didn't feel like I was an embarrassment and couldn't even sell 400 seats, you know. That's a real kick in the old, you know, gonads of your ego, as if, you know, you can't even fill a 400-seat building anymore. It's like, well, I might as well hang up the hat. I'm done.
Well, that you did. And all considered, I know obviously you say it takes you out of the business. It changes your mindset. It means you're wearing different hats on the same night and you can't commit to the things you need to commit to. Having said all that, knowing how well it went, would you have done it sooner and would you do it again?
I wouldn't have done it sooner because it was the right thing to do at the right time. Would I do it again? If the necessity dictated it, I might. But now, you know, it's got to be the right circumstance. It's got to be for the right reason. You can't just, you know, oh, well, that worked. Let's do it again. And now hammer that nail into the board and, you know, expect it to work the same every time. You know, again, we're trying to shoot a bullet through a moving car, you know, without hitting anything in the car and still striking that emotional target. And it just so happened that, you know, the stars aligned and, you know, and it was, I was able to put together an angle, a story, you know, pretty quickly and easily that played out, you know, in a short amount of time and, you know, built to that match and that moment of getting the 5 minutes with Shannon to do, which if you noticed, I didn't actually win the match and I didn't actually beat him. You know, I didn't pin him or anything. So that window, that door is still open. You know, you can have your bad guy now come back and point that out, that if it were, you know, necessary and ever any day that we wanted to try and relive, you know, redo business again, he now has a talking point. He can say that, you know, that he didn't, you know, I didn't really win the match, so therefore I wasn't entitled to my 5 minutes. He can say that the only reason I didn't even wrestle him. All I did was I assaulted him. The only way I was able to do that was because all the other wrestlers kept him, you know, bullied him and kept him in the ring. You know, he can make up anything now, and, you know, all because that door's still open that I didn't win. All I did was I just beat him up, you know. So
should you want to lean back into it, there is something there. Should
you can if want to, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, should you want to. OVW, yeah. There is No Rest for the Wicked, which is ironically the name of the next show off the back of the Netflix documentary. They're back in October for pay-per-view, but you can join them every Thursday from 7 p.m. They're at the Davis Arena every Thursday in Louisville, our OVW. Yeah. But No Rest for the Wicked's coming up. I feel like this is going to be, with all the energy and the euphoria coming out of the Netflix documentary, Al, I feel like No Rest for the Wicked is just as important as the big one, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I, you know, there is no one particular show that's not important. Every television show is important. Every pay-per-view is important, you know? So, you know, it never ends. Once we get one done, we're moving right on to building to the next. And, you know, we're, you know, in the process right now of building to October 21st, you know, starting to put together and build momentum for these matches. You know, I've got to, you know, plan out, because every year annually we've done what we call the Nightmare Cup. Danny Davis, the founder and owner, original owner of OVW, he, you know, was a significant tag team wrestler for years. And the Nightmare Cup is a tag team tournament to win the, we have a trophy, and, you know, by winning that trophy, you automatically get a tag team title shot at the place and time that you choose. So I've got to plan that out. You know, I've got to plan out other matches, significant matches, I think, that will, you know, have some interest and real heat, you know, for the show. And hopefully, you know, we'll tell the right kind of stories and, you know, build the right kind of characters so that, you know, on October 21st, people want to tune in and, you know, see the conflict that we've built, and then the resolution of by who wins and who loses.
So we want to send people to watch, obviously, the Netflix documentary, which is ready for you and waiting on Netflix. But once you've watched that, it's all about OVW, No Rest for the Wicked, every Thursday night as well. Where can people find how to watch and where they can watch Ohio Valley Wrestling, sir?
Well, if they, you know, are in the UK or around the world, the best way would be on the Fight TV app. And it airs. We're live from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern time in Louisville, Kentucky, every single Thursday night. And believe me, I mean every Thursday night. We're the second longest running consecutive episodic television next to Raw. Raw has, I think, like 100 more episodes than we do, I think, or I don't know exactly how many more they have than us, but we're actually one episode ahead of SmackDown. So nice. We're on episode this week. I think we're on episode 1259. So we're on our way to reaching in the 1300th consecutive episode here, probably next year. So, which will be incredible. If you want more information on OVW, you can go to ovwrestling.com. If you're wanting to be trained to be a professional wrestler, you can go to ovwacademy.com. We are, in fact, the only wrestling school that is accredited by the State Office of Proprietary Education as a trade school for professional wrestling, sports entertainment, and broadcasting in the world. There is no other that has that kind of standing. So, you can be guaranteed that you're going to be taught the right way. If you're interested in following me on social media, you can go to The Real Al Snow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. If you want to find out more about my career, you can go to Amazon.com, Self-Help, Life Lessons from the Bizarre Wrestling Career of Al Snow. It's a book I wrote about my experiences and road stories. And I don't really talk negatively about anybody. I'm very open, very honest about my mistakes and the lessons I've learned, and then all the ridiculous stories that, you know, of some of the experiences on the road, the ones I can tell without getting somebody arrested. So
the book is most definitely worth a read, but as is your Twitter feed, which if anybody was ever needing a one-liner for any occasion, it is essentially a Rolodex of one-liners that comes off of Al Snow's social media. It's a joy. Al, it is always a pleasure to welcome you onto Cultaholic. Congratulations on Wrestlers. And here is to great things going forward for you and yours, sir.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And please, everybody out there, you know, help us support it. Continue to, you know, put on social media, hashtag Wrestlers Netflix. And let's just build it and make it as big as we possibly can. You know, we're nothing without all of you. And, you know, I'm really, really asking everybody, you know, for your kindness and your support to help build this even bigger.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.